Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Modern Money Smart Pod. I'm your host, Sean McMahon, and thanks to the support of our friends at Ion Markets, this podcast's week-long road trip to the 49th Annual International Futures Industry Conference continues. I'm coming to you from day two of FIA Boca, and I'm joined right now by Chris Perkins, the president at CoinFund. Chris, how's Boca going for you?
Hey, Sean, how are you doing? It's going great. Good to be back. I think this may be my 15th year. A lot happening. In previous cycles, I came as the guy who represented Citigroup and running the futures business there. But now I'm coming as someone who's running a crypto-native registered investment advisor. We've got seed, pre-seed, venture, and liquid strategies. And we also had a big deal today because we administer a benchmark. It's called CSER. And we just had our first effectively interest rate swaps on a brand new index, which is pretty cool. So things are going great.
Okay, I want to dive back into that later on. But how are things going overall? What are some of the themes you're picking up from this year's Boca?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I showed up yesterday and I walked into a crypto discussion around the intersection of crypto and AI. It's a space that we've been watching very closely for a number of years. I think we first invested in that intersection in 21. And watching, you know, people like MC Later from Uniswap on stage, again, with the crypto space, seeing standing room only, it seems like we go through these cycles where no one's interested in it, but now they're interested in it again because the markets have come back. So it's a very interesting time to be in crypto. And I think the energy and the innovation and frankly, all the building that we've seen over the last, you know, bear cycle, builders have been building, and now we're starting to see the fruits of their labor as the market's coming back. So it's a very, very exciting time for us.
Yeah, it definitely feels like we're at another maybe, you know, high point in the cycle. You know, a couple years ago, this event was all crypto. Last year, a little less. Now it's back on. From your perspective, you know, all along, everyone's been kind of building, for lack of a better word, the infrastructure behind, you know, Web3 and some of these other platforms. Like, sounds like you're bullish on where it's going, and there's, you know, maybe going to be a new crop of, you know, offerings out there ready to go.
I mean, we've been seeing incredible young entrepreneurs building, defining products, and it's exciting. So we look across many different verticals. We'll look across infrastructure. We'll look across gaming. Gaming is a really exciting vertical that brings utility to the space. We'll look at what we call centralized and decentralized finance. I mentioned the intersection of AI and crypto. There are just so many smart entrepreneurs doing very, very exciting things. We're also seeing a lot of regulatory de-risking. Like it or not, a lot of that's coming through the courts. But as it crystallizes, it gives our founders the ability to build. And what you'll hear crypto people say is, we want regulation. We want thoughtful principles-based regulation. You know, help us get there, and we'll work with you to get there. You know, I sit on the Global Markets Advisory Committee, so I've been as outspoken as possible and really making sure that people understand, you know, ways that we can cultivate thoughtful, principle-based regulation in the space. But once we have that, it really unleashes these entrepreneurs to build. And, you know, we've seen a constant global regulatory de-risking. We saw MiCA happen in Europe. I just met with the economic secretary of the Treasury of the UK. Chris, you know, how should we think about policy? Let's do it proactively. It's all coming together. And I think that's probably one of the most exciting parts of this cycle. The ETF was approved. That's a part of that regulatory de-risking. And what have you seen? You've seen widespread adoption. So we're excited about the next phase of that as people start positioning from Bitcoin, now saying, well, what else is out there? Well, maybe there's this thing called Ethereum. What does that do? It's a very exciting time.
Yeah, and I know on the main stage they talked about that kind of the volumes going towards some of those ETFs is surprising maybe everybody, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it says something, doesn't it? Why is there so much demand? And I think the Bitcoin narrative is pretty easily understood. You know, it has limited supply. It's digital gold. Okay, 21 million coins are as many as will ever be created. People get that. I think what's exciting is what's next. And the next step they take is towards this thing we call Ethereum. Ethereum also has a stable supply. It's not inflationary. In fact, it's slightly deflationary based on some protocol adjustments that were made. It has utility because you need Ether, its native token, to pay for what we call gas that puts smart contracts, that makes things, it powers smart contracts and allows you to put immutable things on chain. So you have utility, you have limited supply, and then you have this thing called yield. And that's what makes things really, really exciting. You have a yielding product that's paying right now between 3 and 4%. And because it's a non-inflationary based currency, the real yield is actually robust. And in many cases, it outperforms fiat every day of the week.
So you mentioned, you know, the intersection of AI and crypto. So give me a few use cases there, the most common use cases.
We were investors in a company called WorldCoin back in 21. And what this does is it leverages human biometrics. It scans your eye. It doesn't maintain the data. And in fact, they use technology to make sure that it's hashed and it's proprietary. It doesn't, you know, just give it away. But what it allows you to do is, as we enter this new phase of like the internet where you don't know who's a bot and who's what, it allows you to show proof of personhood. That's one example. We are also looking, you know, as you look at the AI space, there's going to be a big battle. The big battle is going to be between closed and non-transparent processes and open and transparent ones. And, you know, we side on the open, transparent nature of AI going forward. You know, how do you use decentralization technologies to find as much data as possible, like peer-to-peer? How do you store it? How do you train it? How do you, you know, embed it with smart contracts? And so, you know, we're investing in technologies that look to open source and put AI modeling in a much more transparent light. So there are plenty of companies in our portfolio. It's a huge vertical that we're focused on.
Yeah. So with the AI thing, I wanted to pick your brain about this because I know your background in the market. So when I hear people talk about, yeah, we all want regulation in AI, like, I feel like that's half the question. Like, what kind of regulation? Like, a lot of industries have regulators, but are they effective regulators or not? You know, I mean, headlines now is like what the FAA has done with Boeing. Like, were they really regulating it, or was Boeing regulating themselves? And we kind of saw what happened. So if you were to kind of look at the, you know, the crypto space or, you know, DeFi space, and you're going to have a regulatory model from something that already exists out there, it can be in financial services or anything else, is there any, you know, regulatory agency that you'd look at and be like, that's kind of something we should follow?
Yeah, so crypto unlocks some very interesting capabilities through the AI lens. Some people say it's the authenticator for AI, right? Crypto allows you to put private property on chain. It allows you to take sovereignty over your own data. And I think what are AI models? They're these vast consumers of data. They shouldn't just take your data. You should be willing to give a model your data or not. So like, there's very interesting utility use cases there. As far as regulators go, we've been very, very focused on this and feel very strongly that technology cannot be regulated. It should not be regulated. The internet, who regulates the internet? It's hard. It's decentralized. Nobody regulates the internet. However, if you use the internet for fraudulent or abusive practices, you should be absolutely held accountable. And so, you know, in the blockchain space, there's been a big, huge dialogue around national security and says, oh, this technology is bad for us. No, the technology is just technology. It's not good or bad, right? And what I tell people is, look, I was in Iraq. I fought in the Battle of Ramadi. My unit had 260 or so wounded folks. We were shot at, RPG'd, blown up, right? And the enemy used the internet, they used mobile phones, and they used garage door openers. And that was their weapon of choice because they'd use the garage door opener to trigger the IED, right? That was all before blockchain, by the way. But you know what? Thinking through that example, we should really get rid of garage door openers because they're really, really dangerous, right?
I see where you're
going
with that.
So what we're saying is that, look, technology, you do not want to put constraints on coders that are coding. However, if that technology is used in a way and the activities that are undertaken are against the law, well, please. There's nobody who wants fraudsters, hucksters, or however they're described, out of the industry more than we do. And I'll be honest, according to my read of regulation, the regulators are currently fully empowered to attack and aggressively pursue and enforce against those instances. Maybe attack's too strong a word, but you know what I mean. So like, let's get the fraudsters out. I think through this cycle, in crypto especially, you're seeing an industry that's really cleaned up in the last couple of years. A lot of the excess that we saw is gone. Now, maybe it comes back like all markets and it ebbs and flows, but like, I think we're entering this cycle with a much, much stronger foundation, less leverage, and feel pretty good.
I love that analogy, the garage door opener. That's great. All right, let's get back to Caesar and the news you guys made today. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, Caesar is very, very exciting from our perspective. When Ethereum moved from proof of work to proof of stake, head exploded, and I said, wow, Ethereum now has a native interest rate. And I remember this is a long time before the merge, before it was, you know, it transitioned. And I said, guys, who do you think is working on this? And they're like, no one's working on this. And I'm like, well, we have to do it. We need to do it because the interest rate swap market alone is a $500 trillion market. If we have a benchmark staking rate in crypto, we can compose all types of things on top of it. And we can give real utility to a number of industry participants. So we built it. And essentially what it does is it looks at the million or so validators, and every day they receive rewards. They receive rewards from emissions, and they receive transaction fees. And all we do is we take the mean and we annualize it. And today it's printing between almost 4%. It's a very strong real yield, and it can be used as a benchmark. And it can also be used now as we build social consensus around an opportunity for risk transfer. So an interest rate swap is a perfect example, fixed versus float. And there's plenty of folks out there who need to hedge because they're concerned about the price of gas, as an example. But there's also a really, really interesting use case around what we call total return. And so Ethereum is interesting, like I said, for a couple of reasons. It has limited supply. It has utility through smart contracts, and that yield. And that yield is really exciting. The problem with the ETFs as they're coming out, we don't think that yield is going to be allowed because there's issues around technically how you stake and unstake, and you can drive that yield. So we offer a synthetic benchmark that can now be used for futures products. You know, why would you want ETH if you're an investor when you could get ETH plus staking if you're holding it over any period of time? And what Caesar does is it gives you that standard benchmark for yield. So think of it like an open, transparent LIBOR that you can observe on chain.
And remind me now, when did you launch Caesar?
I think we announced it last April, and we have had a number of funds announce that are using it as a benchmark. So again, if you're an investor and you want exposure to ETH, would you want ETH or do you want ETH plus staking? So there are some press releases around that. And then today is the first interest rate swap or staking rate swap, fixed versus floating. Super, super exciting day for us.
Awesome. Well, getting things back here to Boca, anything you're looking forward to the rest of, I guess, we're a little bit past halfway, but the rest of the event, any panels or any just a bunch of client meetings, or what's your week look like?
You know, I spend a lot of time at the intersection of traditional finance and crypto, you know, two worlds that I straddle. And it's really exciting for me to talk to the top global exchanges in the world, market providers, and all of them have this pent-up desire to get into the crypto space. And working with them, almost like a Rosetta Stone to translate sometimes, helps them push their initiatives forward. And so, you know, what excites me is like continuing to have those conversations around where we can innovate, where we can improve the system, and where we can bring our portfolio companies, we've got 120 portfolio companies, into the picture that can help them achieve their goals. So it's been a great conference, had some amazing conversations, and very excited about going forward.
Well, great. Chris, I know you're busy, so appreciate your time talking to me, and enjoy the rest of the week.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me again. Awesome.
Well, that's it for now. But don't worry, we're going to be bringing you more episodes throughout the week. So follow this feed for more interviews and insights from Boca. And if you want to keep up on all the latest news from the clear derivatives industry, not just from here in Boca, but throughout the entire year, follow the link in the show notes to sign up for the daily FIA Smart Brief newsletter.